This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back, with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Current podcast. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. In the wake of yet another night of violence in Portland, including a conservative activist who was shot and killed by an apparent Antifa member Saturday night, politicians at the local, state, and federal levels have been quick to blame each other. Portland's Mayor Ted Wheeler, who made it clear who he believes is at fault in a press conference Sunday with Portland Police Chief Chuck Lavelle and District Attorney Mike Schmidt. Do you seriously wonder, Mr. President, why this is the first time in decades that America has seen this level of violence? Wheeler said. It is you who have created the hate and the division. Wheeler is far from the first left-leaning politician to take President Donald Trump to task for his incendiary remarks, often delivered on Twitter, and bombastic nature, which they claim reflect his desire to stir up division and even violence. True to form, President Trump responded on his favorite platform, calling Wheeler, quote, weak and pathetic. The president also praised the thousands of his supporters who had paraded through Portland earlier Saturday flying flags and Trump banners, calling them great patriots. Portland is a mess, and it has been for many years, the president tweeted Monday. If this joke of a mayor doesn't clean it up, we will go in and do it for them. Trump and his administration have previously clashed with Portland officials and Oregon Governor Kate Brown over the presence of a beefed-up contingent of federal officers in Portland who were eventually removed from that city amid claims that they abused the use of force and detained suspects in violation of their constitutional rights. Brown posted a lengthy statement Sunday blasting Trump, saying he had, quote, encouraged division and stoked violence. It happened in Charlottesville, she said. It happened in Kenosha. And now, unfortunately, it is happening here in Portland, Oregon. But despite the president's jeers and tweets, this is a matter of life and death. Whether it's his completely incompetent response to the pandemic, where nearly 200,000 have died, or his outright encouragement of violence in our streets, it should be clear to everyone by now that no one is truly safe with Donald Trump as president. Also on Sunday, Governor Brown released her unified law enforcement plan to curb the months of nightly violence in Portland, but it didn't take long for the strategy to hit a serious snag. A key aspect of Brown's plan was the cooperation of the Clackamas and Washington County Sheriff's offices to support the Portland Police Bureau with personnel and resources to keep the peace and protect free speech. This evidently came as a surprise to the sheriffs of Clackamas and Washington counties, both of whom said on Monday that they have no interest in involving their officers in the protests in Portland, citing hostility and a lack of public support for law enforcement. Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts said the governor never reached out to him about her plan or the role she hoped his office might play in it. The governor's plan involved, among other things, an increased police presence at protests and more arrests. Well, had Governor Brown discussed her plan with my office, I would have told her it's about changing policy, not adding resources, Roberts said. Increasing law enforcement resources in Portland will not solve the nightly violence and now murder. The only way to make Portland safe again is to support a policy that holds offenders accountable for their destruction and violence. The current policy in effect by Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt is to not pursue many of the charges against demonstrators, including disorderly conduct, interfering with police officers, and even, in some circumstances, rioting. Roberts said that even those who face charges are not being held, but instead released on their own recognizance. To effect change, the sheriff said, arrestees must be released on bail only if they meet certain conditions, which he did not specify. The same offenders are arrested night after night only to be released by the court and not charged with the crime by the DA's office, Roberts said. The next night, they are back at it, endangering the lives of law enforcement and the community all over again. For all of us in law enforcement, keeping our community safe is our first priority. No amount of human resources will stop the nightly cycle of violence that is making Portland unsafe, Sheriff Roberts concluded. Only a criminal justice system that holds offenders accountable will do that, he said. Washington County Sheriff Pat Garrett also released a statement Monday afternoon saying he would support Portland police in indirect ways, but he too would not be sending deputies to staff protests. The lack of political support for public safety, the uncertain legal landscape, and the current volatility combined with intense scrutiny on use of force presents an unacceptable risk if deputies were directly deployed, he said. While the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office will not be sending staff into Portland, they will assist the Oregon State Police with calls for service in Clackamas County as needed, while OSP's resources are deployed elsewhere. The Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, OACP, and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, that's the OSSA, also released a statement Monday saying that its member agencies would not assist with the governor's unified law enforcement plan. House Republican leader Christine Drazen is continuing to push the issue of Clackamas County being shackled to its larger and more COVID-impacted neighbors for Phase 2 reopening, she told the Canby Area Chamber Director Kyle Lang during a virtual luncheon on Tuesday. Oh, Lord have mercy, I want us to be unshackled, the first-term state representative from Canby said with a laugh in answer to a submitted question from a chamber member, adding that she brings the matter up to Governor Kate Brown every time we talk. There is no basis for Clackamas County to be tied to Multnomah County based on the data, Drazen said. The data does not say that we are equivalent for how our communities are managing COVID right now. Home to the city of Portland, Multnomah has doubled the population of Clackamas and has seen more than three times as many confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus and more than twice as many deaths, according to the latest data. Washington County also has more residents and cases than Clackamas, but fewer than Multnomah. Elected officials and business leaders from both counties have begged the governor to decouple them from Multnomah County, and both have been denied. Clackamas County leaders have also decried Brown's decision to funnel nearly $250 million in federal coronavirus funding to Multnomah, Washington, and the city of Portland, while denying their own comparatively modest request of $45 million. And Representative Drazen echoed these complaints on Tuesday. We are tied to two jurisdictions that are able to manage COVID independent of the state because they have their own resources, Drazen said. Clackamas County doesn't. Clackamas County has to spend their own money outright directly and then request reimbursement and hope that it was eligible. The disparity has a real impact on businesses and working families in each county, Drazen said, where Multnomah and Washington County can offer grants and other supports to businesses hobbled by the Phase 1 coronavirus restrictions. Clackamas County cannot. The rest of the state, for the most part, operates on a county-by-county basis. And in some cases, counties have been allowed to progress to the governor's second phase of reopening despite having more cases and deaths with smaller populations than Clackamas. I keep encouraging her to reconsider, Drazen said of the governor. So far, no bueno, no luck. We will keep trying, though. I will not give up. To see the full broadcast of Tuesday's event, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com. Frank Cutsforth, owner of Cutsforth Market and the founder and organizer of the Cutsforth Cruisin', didn't know what to expect at this year's rendition of the popular classic car show. The event, like virtually every other large gathering in the state, was canceled in May, then reinstated with a new location and significant modifications a couple of months later. To make the challenge of predicting attendance even more, well, challenging, the Cruisin' did not take pre-registrations this year. So organizers really had no idea what to expect for the 26th annual Cutsforth Cruisin' until the people started showing up at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds Saturday morning. And show up they did, with more than 500 cars and vehicles on display and an estimated 2,000 more lined up throughout the day in a drive-through experience designed to comply with the coronavirus guidelines still in effect. When the gates opened up, they started pouring in, Cutsforth said, and they just kept coming and kept coming. Cutsforth revealed that it had actually been the staff of the county fairgrounds who had approached him about bringing back the car show in a safe and modified fashion. They did a lot of legwork in terms of the logistics as how the Cruisin' would work at the fairgrounds and getting sign-off from the county and other agencies, Cutsforth said. He also thanked Police Chief Brett Smith, Fire Chief Jim Davis, and the Cruisers, the local classic car community in Canby, many of whom met him outside Cutsforth Market early each Tuesday morning for weeks to iron out the details and ensure a successful event. You know, the spirit of this town, it's pretty amazing, Cutsforth said. They made this happen. It's such a great feeling, and I'm glad we did it. He told the story of walking the grounds with his young grandson Saturday morning, looking for blue cars, his son's favorite color, and how one owner became emotional at seeing how much the boy enjoyed the hot rod that he had lovingly restored. There are a lot of stories like that, he said. That's the kind of connection kids and cars and people can make. Chatting with us on Sunday, Cutsforth said that although the Cruisin' will almost certainly return to its more traditional format next year, assuming the threat of the coronavirus has lifted, this year's edition will always stand out as a special memory. I'm so thankful, he said. The people of Canby are so amazing. It makes you feel like small town America is still alive and maybe people will still get back together again. For photos, visit canbyfirst.com or follow the Canby Current on Facebook and Instagram. Some ghoulish new residents are moving into Canby next month as the Clackamas County Fairgrounds presents Scare Fair, a drive-through Halloween experience running every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through October. The fairgrounds announced the first-time feature on its Facebook page Tuesday, where it also revealed it is partnering with Scare Masters Fearlandia, Davis Graveyard, and the Nightmare Factory, and Creatures of the Night to transform the Clackamas County Fairgrounds into a PG-13 rated Fear Fest. We were just thinking about ways we could do something for Halloween while still fitting within the rules, said Fairgrounds Events and Marketing Coordinator Tyler Neiser. Fearlandia is a top-rated haunted house, attraction, production company, and prop maker based in Tigard. Davis Graveyard is a free Halloween attraction produced by the Davis family at their home in Milwaukee each year. The Nightmare Factory in Salem is Oregon's longest-running haunted house, now in its 35th year. Creatures of the Night is a company that produces haunted attractions as well as handling costumes, makeup, special effects, and storytelling from their headquarters in Merrillhurst. Neiser said he reached out to one of the haunted attraction companies to see if they'd be interested in producing the unique experience at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. They reached out to the other creative teams, and it kind of snowballed from there. Well, since most of them weren't really doing anything this year, they were really interested, Neiser explained. It's cool because they're mostly thinking outside the box of what they normally do. Neiser said the decorations will be automated or static, but will not involve live actors. The different creative teams are working somewhat independently to produce a half-mile drive-through experience, but will ultimately culminate in a cohesive story. They've each kind of got their own themes that they're working on, but they're going to try to unify the whole thing, he said. We're really excited to see what comes of it. Individual ticket price is $11 or $20 per car. The Scare Fair will be presented every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the only Thursday being October 1st and going through November 1st. Tickets are available now and space is limited. Visit ClackamasCountyFair.com to purchase yours.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
no.
You know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
All right, for the Canby conversation today, we're coming at you from a construction site.
Yeah.
The Whiskey Hill store with the owners, Daryl and Amy Lenhart. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi there.
Welcome back onto the Canby Now podcast. So we had you on a few months ago, before the winter, before the COVID craziness, back when life was simpler. And maybe not simpler for you guys.
Yeah, that's
but true. You had just bought the place and you kind of had all these plans, but you had some other loose ends with your lives. You were tying up so you could focus on this. So why don't you kind of update the listeners on where we are now and kind of how we got to this point.
Oh, well, you want me to kick off? Okay.
Yeah, Amy's pointing at you.
So we've had... Well, we've been documenting over 200 hours of volunteer time.
We're at 300.
300 hours of volunteer time. So it's been pretty impressive interest from the community.
Yeah.
We had, through the winter, a lot of work parties in here that just started with the real basics of, you know, the building has just been layered upon layered through previous owners, taking away most of its features as an old schoolhouse and making it just look like a very plain 1970s store.
Yeah.
And it lost a lot of its charm. And so
it's got that great 1970s...
pressboard paneling.
Yeah, pressboard paneling.
It's...
Why use ugly wood from trees when you...
So the paneling, the sheetrock, the covered-up windows, the... You know, the linoleum, you know, 1 foot tiled floors.
The fluorescent lights.
I mean, just everything circa 1970. And so crews came in and just started ripping down all the paneling, taking out things that weren't working. And then the big part right off the bat, there had been a big 30 foot cooler that was full of, you know, it was used on the north wall here for all the drinks they sold. And, that was quite the event. That was one full day with a young man that drove all the way over from Bend, Oregon to answer Amy's ad she put in Craigslist. Said, if you want it, you can take it away for free. And he said, I want it. And he came all the way over here with a truck and trailer, and he didn't leave till about 9 o'clock that night.
How'd you get it out?
Well, it comes apart in sections. They're like big wall sections, it all interlocks, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it was more than one man could handle, and I was helping him, and then I had a cousin that came over, and then we kind of put out a panic warning.
And your brother.
And my brother showed up later, and then a complete stranger who just was on our Facebook page showed up, and him and his wife helped too.
Yeah, well, I put out a call for help.
Yeah.
Because he came from Bend. He makes sausage. Mm-hmm. He has a company called We're the Worst. WURST. And
yeah, I've heard of that actually.
And he thought he could take it apart himself.
Oh yeah.
And I think about 6 o'clock is when, after he'd been here for 5 or 6 hours, panic mode. And it was middle of winter, so it was dark and cold. And I put out a plea for help in our Facebook group, and somebody came.
Yeah,
people started coming.
Yep.
So we got it all in pieces, got it all loaded up. And that's when we could finally see the state of the floor underneath. It had destroyed the floor and the floor structure. So then we had a couple big weekends right after Thanksgiving, where we had a dumpster and we just went to town and took out everything that was rotted and moldy and decomposing. And you know, that we still have the big floor we haven't repaired yet.
Yeah, but that's just one small section that we're talking about over there on that other side of the building.
25 by 8 feet. It's a big chunk of floor.
Yeah.
Then another holiday that we spent out here was New Year's Eve. Uh-huh. And we took the ceiling out of the north cloakroom, mm-hmm. you know, because the building's kind of collapsing in that corner.
Mm-hmm. Sure, why not?
So we took that ceiling down New Year's Eve, climbed up in the bell tower because some of the Garber family came the next, I don't know, some point that week, mm-hmm. and jacked that up and put a brace up so the building won't collapse.
Yeah. So that was a lot of the inside work. And then as we got into the later spring here, and we wrapped up selling our home in Gladstone, mm-hmm. Memorial Day weekend, we were out here and got another big crew and went to town on the old residence. We had taken out a lot of the inside pieces of the residence. We got the old kitchen. We took out all the old closets, saved a lot of the old doors that we wanted. But then we literally got up and saw through the roof to separate the two buildings. And a neighbor came down with a big track hoe, and we just literally started tearing the building into pieces. And we had two great big dumpsters out here that we filled up completely, and we got 3/4 of the old residence taken off. Now we're just...
And we burned solid all weekend, too.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that was just solid old wood, we were able to get rid of. And then...
And we had 25 trees removed that week as well.
That's right.
Busy week.
It was a busy week. So we've cleared the property. We've cleared a lot of the old stuff. We've gutted the old bathroom. Down here, we've got rid of most of the old plumbing. Just this last weekend, we got rid of a bunch of the old cast iron pipe.
Yeah.
And then we've cleaned out a lot of the old electrical too. So just getting things out of the way.
Yeah. Sounds like you still got that critter problem in the background. People can probably hear that. I don't know.
Oh.
A raccoon or...
There's a critter here.
Yeah. It's a very cute looking critter.
But... Yes, blue-eyed.
Yeah.
Chubby.
So as you saw when you drove up, the latest challenge is, so we started digging into the front entrance and taking off all the layers of different... flooring or decking that had been used.
Well, I asked you if you were rebuilding the foundation, and you said, what foundation?
Yeah, I was like, rebuild's not the word. Building a foundation for the first time.
Yeah.
Is
because it had just been like, there. That era's equivalent of cinder blocks stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
With a wood set on top.
Yep.
There.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, but the cinder blocks were still whole. Mm-hmm. But it was the wood that was sitting on top of them that they had poured the asphalt up against that had disintegrated.
Yeah.
So the wood was disintegrated and the building was just settling.
Yeah. On and that's this what people would consider the front porch.
Yeah, the front, right. front porch.
With the bell tower on top. Yeah. So it's a substantial, two-story building with rotten 18 inches in some places of rotten wood.
Yeah.
It's just... Thinking.
And then somewhere.
Okay, we're almost done.
Somewhere in the early 80s is when they added the. I don't know if you remember, it had a big steel door.
Yes.
And great. So my brother came over, helped me and my son, and we had a couple of neighbors came. And it took all five of us to get that thing out and carry it away. It was really heavy steel.
Yeah.
And but that much weight sitting on that for all those years, I'm sure added to the decay. It was just, it just wasn't built to hold that much weight all the time.
So
now, if people drove up, you'd see four big orange jacks, and I'm lifting up the whole front of the bell tower and straightening it out, and we're going to have a company come and put a proper foundation in, and we're going to get it all put back together correctly.
Well, let's tell people a little background, because obviously, you know, you're going to eventually have a deli and a store here. It would obviously be much easier to just build a new building, right, rather than trying to undo all the, you know, repairs done with chewing gum and things over the years and try to do it properly. But this building is historic and is a huge part of the community, the original schoolhouse that was here. Let's remind folks a little bit about what we've got here.
So it was originally built in 1926 across the street where 91 school is. And when
was 91 school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was
Whiskey Hill.
It was Whiskey Hill school because 91 school was at the other corner.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's the name thing. That's a whole interview in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
So when they built the new 91, the brick building, they moved this over here. Mm-hmm. And so Daryl's dad went to school in the schoolhouse, graduated in 1945, so 75 years ago. And it is a registered historic building. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of meaning to the community. I mean, we have people stop almost daily, several times a week for sure. Mm. They're excited. They contact us. Just on at the end of last week, a family stopped. It was the granddaughter of Lonnie Yoder, who was the teacher here for 40 years, and ended up he was the principal of 91 at the end of his career, and she was here with her brother who was visiting from Boston. Mm. And they're so excited, and their family all across the country is following on Facebook, and they're thrilled. So so this building has a lot of meaning to the community, but also as well to us. Daryl and I both grew up here. We graduated from 91 in 1980 and Canby High School in 84. I grew up a mile that way. He grew up half a mile that way. So there's just all kinds of history for us and for the community. In general, the community is really, really excited.
And you've talked about, I think it was before we turned the recorder on, but the ways that the community has supported the effort as well. And I think it's not just in the excitement and the support. It's not just that you guys are going to put a store here, but the way you're doing it, that you're trying to restore it and honor the original setup. And you kind of took me through and showed me this is where the old library is and what you're going to do stuff with. And just you had people stop by and tell you these really cool memories of the place. And you're trying to honor those as much as you can.
People giving us old memorabilia, lots of one lady gave us her diploma from graduating from here in 1945 as an eighth grader, and
that's so cool.
Old books, old pictures. One man, it wasn't from this schoolhouse, but it was from another schoolhouse in the area. He gave us a picture of George Washington that they would have hung in all of the schoolhouses.
Oh, sure.
He's like, I just want to make sure you guys have it so you can hang it up.
He said you can't have a schoolhouse. You could not have a schoolhouse in the country without a portrait of George Washington. And he bought it. It was a school outside of Malala.
Yeah.
And he bought it when they were selling things before they tore it down. Mm-hmm. And he's had it for years, and he brought it and gave it to us.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And people have given us photographs. And so we'll have a historical section in the seating area.
Did we end up saving that chunk of pipe?
Yes. Yep.
What
do we got? So we have... They took down, Daryl and his brother and son took down all the cast iron pipe that we're going to be replacing from the bathrooms and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it was, the pieces were signed by J.S. Fisher from Donald O. And it is a relative by marriage of Daryl's.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I got the whole history.
I have a first cousin that's a Fisher, and it would have been his great-grandfather.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, and the aunt sent me all of this information through a text. She just knows.
Yeah.
You know.
But there was, Fisher's was one of the prominent families out here, and we had... In fact, it was one of the Hostetlers that grew up out here, came by the other day, and he's like, it was a Fisher that moved this building. And sure enough, we find a pipe that must have been, they put on there after they made it, you know, hey, this is going to Fisher so he can build this building. And we're like, oh, another connection to another family out here.
Right.
And it's just so...
Well, and when we were tearing the residence down, we found a section, Aaron found just a portion of a brick signed by Roy, who would have been Roy Kanegi, who had a tile company. It wasn't Needy Brick and Tile, it was the other one. But it was right down the street, right by Zion Church. So he owned that. But then he eventually owned the store as well.
Right.
And he signed his name like with a nail in the brick when the brick was wet.
Wow.
And Aaron was throwing rubble, you know, into a wheelbarrow. He's like, I think you might want this.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and when we took the porch apart, my son was just combing through it over and over again. And we found like the old sign we showed you, old bottles
of
products that we were like, that's not even made anymore. It's some drink that was made in Salem that was for sale here in the 50s and 60s. And
the elusive Whiskey Hill whiskey. Maybe. Yeah. Might be down there somewhere if you look hard enough.
So he's been excavating. He's had a really good time excavating and has found dozens of things.
And I just love it because you guys, like you mentioned, are from here, and those things have so much more meaning to you than an outside person or contractor, you know, coming in. You're like, oh, that's my grandfather, or whatever. Like that person knew my grandfather.
Yeah,
so,
that person was related to us or something.
Yeah. All right. Buddy. Well, before the raccoon makes us leave, can you give folks a little bit of a vision for what's going to be here when we're all said and done?
So our vision for the whole project is we will have a new residence on the back, and that's going to be the first thing that the community will see completed, because right now living in the 20-year-old RV is not our dream home.
Yeah.
And then inside the store, we'll have a coffee shop with a drive-through coffee. So you'll drive through the old gas station portico, and then we'll have a limited menu deli inside, and a seating area that will look a bit like a schoolhouse, and we'll have a pellet stove where the old Potbelly stove was, with a door going outside on the north wall where all the amazing windows are to an outside seating area. And it'll be all landscaped, and we hope to have some special events here. Mm. And then I revitalize vintage and antique furniture, so we'll have a small section of that with some home decor. And then we will have a very small grocery section, depending on what the community wants and
needs
out here.
Yeah.
So that's...
And besides all that, you know, as far as the business side of it, is just, like you said, the connections we have, is a lot of people are just excited that it's a place they can come and hang out.
Yeah.
And we've been told by many people, it's like, oh, you'll have many of the old timers that will come here, and it'll be a great just rendezvous point to have a cup of coffee and hang out and tell stories. And the airport traffic, so many people at the airport are so excited, like, hey, it's a place that we can come and get something to eat. It's a place that if we want people to fly in that are friends, they can actually have a place to stay the night.
Yeah.
Just, you know, so many opportunities to build community out here. And so, you know, the business is really just the excuse to bring people together.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the fun part of it.
Yeah, we're excited. Because even now, as the community has come to help, and I'll put a call out on
in our Facebook group for, well, we need, you know, if you have such and such.
Yeah.
Usually it's kind of little things, or we just want to borrow something. And it has shown up almost every single time. Mm-hmm. Like, things just show up, or people will message us, or if they have our number, they'll text and say, yeah, why didn't you ask me? Well, I don't know who to ask, so I just put it out there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 300 hours of volunteer time is it's amazing.
People drive by every day. We get the same people that are drive by and honk. They'll throw their arm out, big thumbs up, and stop, and just, she's out in the corner, and thank you for what you're doing. It looks so awesome. We're like, we're tearing it all to pieces. Right. Yeah. It's awesome.
We think it's funny.
They remember what it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because people will come in.
It's clean now.
I mean, it looks, it's awful. Like you said at the beginning, it looks like a construction site, and they'll say, oh, it looks beautiful. We're like, it's a mess. But I think they are thinking about, you know, what it looked like before.
Yeah.
They have
an imagination. They can see where you're going.
Yeah.
When is the Hallmark movie going to happen? Can I ask you guys? It'll be called Whiskey Hill.
Well, if anyone has a connection to Hallmark, just let us know.
Hallmark.
Okay, you can. There you go.
Or, you know,
be my big break.
There you go.
Who would play you guys?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think
somebody younger than me.
Jamie Lee Curtis for Abe Knopfler.
I get Helen Hunt a lot.
Helen Hunt, okay, yeah. that'll work. She's got that background.
But I think she's older than I am. We're close. It needs to be somebody younger.
Okay, maybe the Gilmore Girls gal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I have no idea who would play me.
Yeah.
Well, because the person you get is, I think he's older than you too. I can't remember. Anyway, I guess they don't have to look exactly like us.
I don't know if Hallmark can even afford Helen Hunt either.
So. That's right.
Do you guys have a timeline that you're looking on? Or
just... I keep telling people fall of 21 is when I want to be open.
Yeah, cool.
And the residents, we're hoping. We don't even have our permits yet.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping and praying that we break ground in September. So everyone thinks I'm crazy, but it's been miracle after miracle with things happening around here, big and small, where we just don't know how in the world we're going to get something done or how it's going to get accomplished. And then someone will come up and say, hey, if you ever need someone to do such and such, or if you ever need this tool, you know, someone calling at 6 a.m. on demo day saying, could you guys use a track hoe? yes. over and over and over again. Yes. So,
he did in a 2-hour period what would have taken 2 days to do. That machine.
Yeah.
So we just keep praying. We try to pray every morning that for safety, because. It's a little dangerous
almost
around here.
100-year-old building.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we would just be able to get the work done, that we'd be able to keep going. It's hot. We're tired.
Yeah.
But it's been good.
Awesome. Well, it is looking beautiful. love seeing the history being restored and coming back to life. Thank you guys so much for doing it. Thanks for your bravery for taking on a project like this.
Brave or crazy.
Both. It's funny how close those two fall.
Yeah, it's a fine line.
That's right.
And thank you guys.
Well, it's him. He's
the crazy one or the brave one?
he is the mastermind, the engineer who's making it all happen. And I just feed everyone and get the supplies during the day, and then he works his regular job, and then he works until it's dark out here. So he's amazing. So, and then when it's all done, I'll make it beautiful.
Yep. I'll make it functional, she'll make it beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good team.
Yeah, it's a good team. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for having us back out here. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with honestly with him on weekends, and I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go, and within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time, and sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me. Three generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? We have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Canby Music has pianos now.
Yes, that sound means obviously we're coming to you again from Canby Music Store, and I'm here with the whole crew this time. Do you guys want to say who you are and what you do here?
I'm Allie, and I'm a lesson instructor. I teach guitar, ukulele, I do vocals, and am I missing anything? I don't think so.
Clarinet?
Oh yeah, coming soon.
Awesome. I'm Reese. Probably the newest part of the crew, and I play brass, so trumpet, euphonium, trombone, and I am newly introed to saxophone, so that's going to come at you soon, too.
Awesome.
I'm Nathan. I'm the repair technician here. I repair both brass, woodwind, and guitars. So.
Very cool. Handsome-looking crew, and who's this guy again?
Oh, I'm the old guy here. Brian Haynes, 12 years, Canby Music, and they don't only do lessons or repairs. Everybody's doing sales and various things, and then we've been putting this store together for a couple of weeks now, bringing everything over.
Yeah, Reese has been your general contractor.
Well, yeah, Reese has been here longer than that. He's been swinging hammers and shoveling and hauling stuff around with us. And
Yeah, some of those muscles might come in handy on some of the repairs. I don't know.
Like a tuba?
Yeah.
Yep. So, basically, we are up and running. It's not exactly finished yet, you know, with getting all the stuff on the walls and everything, but we are doing lessons, we are selling products, we're repairing, and band season is approaching with the beginning of school.
Yeah.
So we are going to be renting instruments like usual, but probably in an unusual way. We normally would go to the schools and have what's called a band instrument rental night.
Yeah.
And with schools not being in...
Nobody's allowed to go in there.
And so...
Not even people with instruments.
People are going to have to seek out their instruments on their own, like going to music stores.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that's going to be tough is normally they learn how to put these instruments together. They learn how to play their first notes and all that stuff in school.
Yeah.
And so what we are going to do is anybody that rents a band instrument from us is going to receive 2 free lessons. The first one will be when they rent it, we'll spend a half hour with them going over how to put that instrument together, how to care for it and clean it, put it away.
Right, how not to put it together.
Yeah, how not to destroy it in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Cool, that is, I didn't think about that. Yeah, the learning curve of the folks that are coming in here for lessons is going to be so much steeper than it probably normally would be.
Right, well, I've talked to several band teachers of middle schools and high schools, well, mainly middle schools, about this part, that... it's one thing to teach kids over the internet that have already played. It's another to try to teach somebody that's never put together a clarinet, never played a note on there. So we are going to do that and have that first free lesson, and then they'll be able to come back in a couple weeks once they've been you know, in their classroom, virtual classroom, and then we'll go over whatever struggles that they're
quote
having.
Quote unquote, in their classroom.
That's funny. So how do folks sort of, since band is not happening or not happening the normal way, how do folks connect with you to get an instrument?
And that's all we know. We don't know exactly how it's going to go.
What
we,
it's going like. Yeah.
We just know it's not going to be normal. But how do they connect with us? So,
how do they get in that pipeline, as far as you know?
So I would imagine that most of the teachers are going to send out some sort of flyer, you know, saying where they can get instruments from. And so they can come to the store and rent it just like normal. They can also call us, and we can do everything over the phone, and we could and we could deliver it to their house, kind of like the touchless, like if you get a pizza or something.
Grubhub or whatever. The Grubhub of instruments.
Why not?
You can have that free marketing for you.
So we will deliver the instruments, and there will be no additional charge for that. But just coming in, you can do that.
And like you mentioned on the intro, you've got some new things, some new offerings here. The keyboards and pianos, it wasn't that you used to hate them and now like them. You didn't have the room for them, and now you do in this new school.
I never like to have just one of something. And in the old store, I would have only been able to have one or two. That's the same way with drums. It's like, you know, if you don't have a selection of something, it's... so now we have more space, and we are a Casio dealer, including their higher-end Privia lines, which are like basically just electric pianos. They have the weighted keys. They they sound exactly like an acoustic piano, full 88 keys. And so we got how many models we got here? 8 different models.
They look like normal ivory keys.
You look at them, and then it looks like wood for the black keys. It looks like ivory for the white keys.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the, you know, plastic that you expect on a keyboard.
Well, listen to this.
Yeah, doesn't sound electronic at all.
No, and I could hold this for another 30 seconds, and it'll still ring.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so our lessons rooms are up and running. We have large, brand new lessons rooms on a separate floor with a separate entrance, and we can do it that way. We are doing lessons on Zoom as well, if people would prefer to do that. And I'm throwing this out there because I think it's a cool idea. We're also going to do lessons on the porch, if anybody would like to do that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we could sit outside. I think that'd be really good for brass and woodwind because, you know, there's that air travel. And so you can sit out there, and that might be fun for people regardless.
For at least a couple more weeks, right?
They got to keep going. Once you do the porch lessons, you got to do it year round.
You never transition anywhere else. You're stuck out there on the porch. The lessons rooms down there are equipped with cameras and TV screens and whatnot, so you could probably even do like distance lessons, just, you know, them in the room and you guys outside or something like that.
If I figure out how to do that, there are cameras in there, and the idea of that, originally was that parents or whatever could sit out in the waiting room, and then they could see them, and so that was the whole point of that, and so that could be possible.
Yeah, cool. Anything else?
So let's see here. We got band instrument rentals that we're ready to go. We have lessons. We're also a daycare. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know. You got.
I already got three kids right here.
You got a. I think he wants to be a singer. The one that you keep hearing in the background.
Oh yeah, he's already.
We'll have to get Allie back in here for vocal lessons.
Well, he's doing that lip thing. Do that lip thing again.
Cool. All right. Well, come to Canby Music for all your band rental or daycare needs.
All right, we're back. We forgot something. So the Chamber of Commerce, hot off the press, we are going to do a official grand opening on the 19th, September 19th, which is a Saturday.
Cool.
All day long, you can come in. I think they're calling it ringing the bell or ringing the register.
Okay, yeah.
And so they're going to put the word out and have everybody stop by come and see the plays, and if they like something, they can buy it. And so September 19th is that Saturday. All day long, we're open from 10 to 5 on that day. Come on down for the official grand opening. But you can also come down before that. But that will be the official grand opening.
Yeah.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.